to Directions on the News for Tuesday, April 3rd, 2007. This is Adina Schutzberg, and I'm joined by my colleague, Joe Francica. This week, we'll discuss how the human element, rather than technology, is becoming the focus of discussions around geospatial products and services. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. With ArcGIS 9.2, you can be more productive with GIS and increase access to geographic knowledge within your organization and on the web. Learn more about ArcGIS 9.2 at www.esri.com/directionsmag.
Our topic today has to do with the human animal and its impact and reaction to geospatial technology. Now, I've been in this industry for between 15 and 20 years, depending on how you count it. And in my years doing implementations and watching, I've heard an awful lot of sort of off-the-cuff comments that some of the real challenges in implementing GIS within an organization, be it a business or a government agency, for example, had to do with the people and the politics more than it did with the technology. And I think I've certainly seen plenty of examples of that being true. What we wanted to highlight this week was how that is becoming more and more true in the world writ large, out in the consumer marketplace, and as more and more regular people start using geospatial technology. Now, the first example I want to raise was sort of the big news over the weekend that popped. It was found that Google had apparently replaced imagery that had been post-Katrina to be pre-Katrina. And that caused a whole bunch of concern and outcry. There were conspiracy theories that they're trying to whitewash over what happened. It got so far that on Saturday I was reading about how the House Committee on Science and Technology was doing an investigation to find out why Google had changed the imagery. And there's a wonderful quote from one of those news articles from the weekend, and I will quote, "Edith Hallman, staff counsel for the House subcommittee, said it would be useful to understand how Google acquires and manages its imagery because, quote, people see Google and other internet engines, and it's almost like the official word," end quote, end quote. So clearly, the government is really upset because this private company made a change in the data that was on its website. And that in turn, before that, the various communities, especially those in New Orleans, those who had been impacted by the hurricane, were already up in arms. So this is a really sort of really interesting intersection of how the technology and politics and people all sort of roll together in this one little incident.
It is really interesting, Adina. And one of the things I think that you could point to is why did the government have to step up and remark on this situation? It almost seems like the government is admitting that they're that Google would be the de facto source if you wanted to find out what was the latest. Whereas, you know, really, why isn't the government stepping up and supplying imagery on a regular basis or updating imagery on a regular basis so that the public can feel a little bit more secure about what the sources of the data are, rather than a private company like Google?
Right, and the way that seems to have been justified, and to be fair, details of this are still bubbling to the surface, is that the government was concerned that a federal agency like USGS or FEMA might have contacted Google and asked that they make some changes here. Now, there's no indication that that has been the case, and Google, so far as I understand, has not yet responded to those questions. What has happened since then, actually this was Sunday night, Google did in fact get updated imagery, post-Katrina imagery that is now on both Google Maps and Google Earth. And to be fair, Google did respond in somewhat timely fashion on its blog, where John Hankey replied and said, you know, we're trying to get the most up-to-date imagery and we're trying to balance that and so forth, but I don't think people are still comfortable about what happened. But this was sort of a key opportunity to see those factors sort of all come together. And frankly, the technology, where the imagery came from and how it's processed and how quickly it's processed, all sort of wasn't the story. The story was this thing that we rely on is messing up, you know, our expectation. You know, we're not getting what we expect out of this geospatial tool.
But you just raised an interesting point, which was where the data came from. And it maybe raises the issue about how much information, how much metadata that we want to see associated with images such as we find on Google. And wouldn't a better place for this be something like the National Map or the Geospatial One Stop, where you would want to find this additional information so that, you know, when they jump back to an imagery which they ostensibly said was better imagery, you know, pre-Katrina, people would know that. People would know when the data was taken. But right now, we really don't know when the imagery was acquired on any of the sites.
To be fair, on Google and on most of the sites, you do get a year. In fact, you'll have a copyright 2005, copyright 2006, and typically the name of the provider, Digital Globe or whomever. That may or may not be enough.
Yeah, I think perhaps geospatial professionals want a little bit more.
Well, I think the public wants more, too. I think part of what this story shows is that the expectations of the public are much higher than we thought they would. And when they went and interviewed people about this, people in New Orleans, they interviewed some university professors, they depend on this stuff as part of their classes and their sort of day-to-day work. People are using this imagery to try to get money out of insurance companies.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, it's gone. The other thing I should point out is that in the blog post by John Henke, it says that this change was actually made to pre-Katrina imagery, if I understand this correctly, in September 2006. So, in fact, this pre-Katrina imagery had been online for many months before we, the public, I read this on an AP article, so I don't know exactly who broke the story, but it was several months before we even found it. And that just strikes me as odd because of how many people look at both of those platforms, Google Maps and Google Earth, all the time.
Well, I think it also brings to the forefront the demand, how close we're getting to the demand by the public for more accurate, more recent data, almost real-time data. And if you're going to be a web portal with geospatial information, it better be the most current and the most accurate. And that's what I think people will eventually want. We want the stuff that was taken yesterday, not a year and a half ago. And when you bring up the issue that we're becoming much more aware of what geospatial information can bring, then you're getting to the point where there are additional market demands on somebody like Google to bring the most current information. And when they do a fallback like this, that's when the red flags go up.
Yeah, red flags also go up in our space having to do with privacy. And that's always been sort of a human concern, tracking issues, having sensors that can look into, to take a picture of my license plate or look into my windows and look into my backyard, those kinds of things. And that's becoming sort of the lead aspect of new technology. So last week, America Online added a new location tool for its instant messenger. So if you like and you download this piece of software, your friends can keep track of you via AOL Instant Messenger, except that it's not available on phones. It's available only on laptops at this point. So a hue and cry went out, but what about the children, right? These kids are going to be tracked and strangers are going to track them down and make trouble. And the technology side of that sort of gets set aside. And AOL decided that this was going to be a separate download, and you need to opt in. And as the article that I read points out, you know, if parents are smart, they've tied the kids' accounts to their own accounts so they can keep track of what it is they have enabled and disabled. Again, the technology is sort of all taken care of, but the way it's going to be used within our lives and how it's going to impact our lives is the real story. That's what we worry about.
Well, I'll go back to your original comment, which was, organizations that get into this technology, there's some barriers there, and it's either a political barrier or a cultural barrier. So now we're running into the cultural barriers. It's no longer a technology issue. We understand how to solve those issues, but culturally we may not be ready to accept it. I'm of the opinion that the privacy issue is going to be solved, because I think it will be solved by technology. The problem will arise when we have to make that mental hurdle, you know, culturally, as a culture, because other cultures have already done it. I mean, if you look at in the Asia-Pacific region, they've already given up some of their privacy. They're not as constrained by some of the privacy concerns that we have here in the States. So I don't think it's going to be a cultural problem, not a technological one.
Now, another sort of cultural issue that we're banging up against fairly regularly. There was actually a news piece today that Global Locate is raised a complaint against Surf, the folks who make the GPS chips, and some of its customers, alleging patent infringement on 6 patents. And, you know, that's the next in a series of litigation situations that we've had regarding mapping and mapping in the Internet. So, again, sort of our cultural predilections of how we run our lives and our governments are banging right up against this technology and, you know, may well limit it substantially depending on how some of these court cases go.
Although I know for certain that this is one in a long string of court cases between Surf and Global Locate, so it's I think they're battering each other at this point. But I noticed that the stock price is down today. Surf stock is down by $1, so there's certainly some impact from that news.
Now, another twist on this people getting involved with geospatial technologies has to do with the web now is much more of a participatory place than it used to be. Here's a quote from Express Computer that was talking about Web 2.0. The concept of Web 2.0 is as follows. Within a period of 36 months, the Internet has moved on from static applications like Google Maps, MapQuest, to more dynamic applications like the various Blogspots, Orkut, MySpace, et al., which derive their existence and updation from the human connections and networks formed around these portals, end quote. So what this is saying is we used to just look at the pretty maps and whatnot, but now we're actually adding to them. We're adding reviews of restaurants, and we're adding our favorite locations that we like to go hiking and those sorts of things. I don't think you'd find anybody in the geospatial space that doesn't argue that that kind of content is very important and is going to drive us forward. The challenge is, how are we going to make money?
Yeah, that's the question of the hour, you know, and I think if we both had the answer to that, we may not be doing. I think there's going to be a lot of smart people out there looking at this because the individual company that starts to aggregate the information more cogently is going to be the one to be able to find the business model that works, and there's going to be a lot of information to sift through and get to the real meat that people want.
Right, and I think what people are looking at examples, Amazon was one of the first to grab a bunch of reviews of an album or of a book and use that as content that draws more people in. And certainly the talk of the hour is YouTube. You know, what gets watched and what gets posted. Now, what's interesting about both of those examples is nobody ever talks about how hard it is to post a review on Amazon or how hard it is to watch or post a video on YouTube. Moreover, no one ever complains about how difficult it is to create a MySpace space. Now, I've never done that, but I hear from those who have that the interface and the interaction is absolutely horrible. And yet, despite that, we've got all these people of a variety of ages and backgrounds putting up these pages. So, again, the technology, as good or as challenging as it may be, is really secondary. It's all about that interaction. It's all about that human connection. So I think we've really got to keep an eye on how we as a community of geospatial professionals are interacting with and finding new challenges in the people side of GIS, and we have to be very sensitive to what's going on with the non-geospatial professionals and the issues that they're raising, because they are likely to be the biggest barrier to bringing any kind of geographic technologies, be they location-based services and tracking and so forth, out into a broader use. ESRI would like to remind you that the American Planning Association will hold its conference, APA 2007, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, April 14th to 17th. Visit ESRI in booth 233 to learn more about ESRI's tools for planning professionals. For more information, visit www.esri.com/directionsmag. We'd like to thank you for joining us today. And be sure to join us for our next podcast. Be sure to tell a friend.